Well, last week in our discussion time, we told a lot of stories. I encourage folks to tell us about things that they remember within the history of Midway. The history of Midway goes back a lot longer than I can know. I only know the last 10 years, but we can go back to the 1950s. And if you really need to know some detailed information, I think Harold Ulfers is the guy to talk to, because he is our one charter member from the original congregation. That's pretty exciting, isn't it? I feel like we should clap for Harold. Yeah, right. Harold and Lillian have been, if there's ever such thing as a pillar of the church, I think Harold and Lillian have always been pillars of the church, not just because they've been around for a long time, but because they've been witnesses for a long time to God's goodness in God's grace. Yes? Did I embarrass you a little bit, Harold? I'm okay with that. I don't know if you are, though, but yeah. Well, one of the interesting things is a few years ago, we started working in our vitality process, we started working on a new mission statement. And the interesting thing is when you work on a mission statement, there's a certain amount of a mission statement that we'll say is aspirational. Do you know what that means? In other words, a mission statement that's aspirational means we're not really sure that this is who we are, but this is who we want to be. And that's okay. That's okay if we're not quite there yet. In fact, I think your mission statement should always kind of stay out in front of you just a little bit, because it reminds us that our work is never done, that our mission is something that we don't just get done and check off a list and then go take a nap until Jesus comes back. But our mission statement is one that is vibrant. Our mission is something that will continue until Christ returns. And that's what makes a mission statement something important, encouraging, and hopefully inspirational. Some of you have probably grabbed your bulletin every week, and it's become such a natural thing to do that you probably even forget to look on the front of it. But on the front of it is our mission statement. Does everybody have one of these? Or have a friend nearby that you can look at? So on the front, here's what it says. Our mission is to boldly follow Christ in community, pursuing life-transforming relationships for God's honor and glory. The way it starts out makes me think of Star Trek, to boldly go where no man has gone before. I remember, you know what sticks in my head? I remember as a little kid watching Star Trek. So that already inspires me. But there's another thing that pops into my head every time from my childhood. My mother was an English teacher. And so she was always very quick to notice anything that grammatically was problematic. See, back in those days, you can get away with it now, but back in those days, you weren't allowed to split your infinitive. Do you know what that means? In other words, you're not supposed to say to boldly follow. You're supposed to say to follow boldly, right? You can't split the two from the verb. Now you're saying, I didn't come here today for a grammar lesson. But what I'm pointing out is sometimes in the midst of looking at a mission or looking at something that's very important to us, sometimes we can get bogged down in some of the words and miss the point of it. So just as I was reminding my mom, don't mess with Star Trek. Okay, don't make me think about grammar right now. I want to think about Captain Kirk, you know, and their mission of what they're doing. Sometimes I think words can even get in our way if we're not living into those words. Boldly is the key word in this mission that got me to tap into the passage that we're going to read today. It should be a question for us to say, do we do what we do in a bold way? And if we don't do what we do in a bold way, how come? And then the next question, of course, would be, if we don't do it in a bold way, what do we need to do to get bold? Right? Because if we're going to fulfill God's mission, we have to pay attention to all those little details. And so that's what brought me to 2 Corinthians 3, 12 through 18, because Paul begins with this phrase, therefore, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. Now, of course, whenever there's a therefore, you got to go back and find what's before that. And we won't take the time to read all that, but I would actually encourage you at some point this week, if you could go back and read the beginning part of the third chapter of 2 Corinthians, you would see how Paul lays out what our hope is in Christ. In other words, it's all centered on who we are in Christ. It's not centered on our skills. It's not centered on our resources. It's not centered on where we're located. Our ability to live boldly can happen wherever God places us with whatever He gives us. The bottom line is not what do we have. The bottom line is, are our hearts willing to give whatever God calls us to do? And that's the challenge for us. If we have that hope, then we are empowered to be bold. Now, immediately, Paul is going to go to kind of a negative side by pointing to what happened to Moses when he put a veil over his face. Now, I don't know, does everybody know this story? So Moses, whenever he would spend time with God on the mountain, he would come down from the mountain and he would be radiating God's glory. Isn't that a beautiful image? Don't you want to radiate God's glory? I hope that we all radiate God's glory. I mean, it must have been an amazing thing. And it's all the more amazing because, remember, if you're radiating God's glory, it isn't your glory. It isn't my glory. He wasn't shining with glory, Moses wasn't, because he did something great. All he did was walk up a mountain, right? But he was radiating God's glory because he was in God's presence. If we are in God's presence in our lives, we should radiate that glory. Nothing we take credit for, nothing we even necessarily try to do, as much as just let it be. But here's what happened. What over time, then, that glory would start to fade. It was like the battery was getting low on his flashlight, right? The light would start to fade, and then Moses would feel embarrassed or concerned, and so he'd put a veil over his face so that nobody would notice that that glory was fading. I wonder if part of the problem wasn't that Moses kind of looked at all of these things as his responsibility. Maybe if the people look at me and they don't see God's glory, they're going to go, "What's wrong with Moses? What happened? His light's fading." Or wondering if they'll even trust him as a leader. Well, you know, we were really excited about following Moses when he was radiating God's glory, but now, I don't know. He seems like things are kind of fading. It's so easy for us in ministry to say, God is at work when things are going great. But if things aren't going the way we hope they will, then we wonder if God's even around. Or we wonder if we're doing it the wrong way. See, I think that's one of the problems too. We can assume if things aren't going the way we hope, then we have to fix something. Rather than bring it to God to say, God, what are you doing here in this moment? And ask for God's guidance to do that. So God's glory within Moses is fading, we can easily get caught up in an old way of thinking. We can start to think, you know, if we mess this up or we don't get this right, we're going to be doomed. We forget from the beginning that it's all about God's glory. It's all about God's initiative from the beginning. And the problem is, if we in our ministry start looking at everything as about us and dependent upon our abilities, then when things go bad, it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If I look at my ministry and say, this ministry isn't going so well, I must be messing something up. You know what? It means every day when I step into my ministry, I step into it with fear. I step into it thinking, I hope I don't mess up today. Or maybe I feel like Moses and I'm thinking, well, I know that things aren't going the way we would hope they would maybe today at Midway. And then what if people look at me as the pastor and go, well, things aren't going so right, so maybe it's the pastor's fault. And then I start to live in fear. If I start to live in fear as a pastor, I guarantee you I won't be a good leader. I will fall into a trap of saying, okay, what do I have to do today to make everybody happy? Instead of saying, what's God calling me to do today to be faithful to His mission? Does that make sense how that can happen? I've confessed to many of you that I'm a recovering people pleaser. And I'm not even sure how far I've gotten in the recovery part. But that's always a danger for me. If things aren't going the way I would hope they would go, instead of my first thought being, okay, God, what are you up to here? My first thought is, what are people thinking about me? What are people going to say about me? Maybe people will be upset with me. What about this? What about that? You see, I forget that it's about God's work and about God's glory. And when I forget that, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that I start to live into. I start to live into my doubts. I start to live into my fears. And we can do that as a whole congregation as well, can't we? We can start to live into our doubts and our fears. The problem is we're thinking, even unconsciously, that the success of the church or the success of our ministries at Midway are all about us and what we accomplish. And then we try to do it all ourselves. But Paul now, speaking of Moses, is trying to invite us into a new way of thinking. In verse 14, he says, their minds, the people of Israel, their minds were made dull, for to this day the same veil remains when the old covenant is read. It has not been removed because only in Christ is it taken away. This is the good news of the new covenant, yes? The good news of the new covenant is because of what God has done in Christ, it's all taken care of, yes? Now, we actually make a mistake, I think, if we fall into the idea that, you know, the Jews lived under the law and they lived under judgment all the time, and we live under grace, so everything's great now. God wasn't a God of grace back then, but he's a God of grace now. No, God was a God of grace all the way through. Even the law was given as a gift of grace to the people because it was